Hi, and welcome to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Steve Martorano. Join us each week as we speak to experts in the behavioral health field, fostering diverse and meaningful conversation on substance abuse and mental health. You know, if you've been listening to either the podcast or the program that airs over the radio, that Retreat Now has a broad portfolio of services and treatments available for people, not specifically who have substance abuse problems, although they're a leader in that field as well, but broader issues that have to do with their mental health. And we're going to take another look at that aspect of treatment and techniques that help people, you know, make their way through some difficult times. To that end, we're going to welcome our guest on the program today. Ronavia Williams is a young woman who had what can only be described as a fairly tough start in life, and she'll tell all that to you straight ahead on the program. She is also going to tell us that in her view, it's never been more true that the pen is mightier than the sword. Ronavia has found it a very long time ago, writing and journaling as a therapeutic method, a way to get centered and bring meaning and peace to her life. So we welcome her to Recovery Radio. Ronavia, thanks for joining us.
Hi there, Steve. Thank you for having me here. I look forward to today's show and all the questions that you have so that we can be able to inspire teens and people all over the world.
Well, I'm really fascinated by the idea of particularly journaling, but I'm a great writer of people, a great lover of people who can write anyway. So I'm really looking forward to this this look at what you've done. We're going to have more about Ronavia's group, which is called Come Forth, but we'll talk about that a little bit later down the road. Let's begin at the beginning and tell us about that rough beginning that you had to life.
Well, I'll have to say, and I talk about it not so often as I would like to. However, from the moment when I came into this world, I always refer to this time when I was born. My, my mom was recovering after she had me. And while she was recovering, I was actually in the ICU. The doctors, they had discovered, they said that there was, I had like something was going on with my brain. I had a swelling in my brain, and they were going to try to have operation on me. And they had shaved off all of my hair. And the only way that my mom found out is because they actually shaved off my hair. So she had, they brought her to me, and brought me to her, and they were like, she freaked out, like, what's going on? What happened to my daughter? And I was like, oh, we're going to have surgery on her. However, they had got a second opinion, and they realized that there was no swelling. It was a misread. And
you were an infant at this point?
I was an infant. I just came in the world.
Okay.
I had just come in the world, and without my mom knowing, they shaved off all my hair, getting ready to prep me for surgery, to only find out that everything was fine. And I've inherited the name Peach, which I'm not too fond of. however, what I've taken from that moment is that there was turmoil from the time I came into this world up until now, you know, and from my childhood growing up. My father passed away when I was 7 years old. I'm sorry, 6 months. I was 6 months, and my father had passed away through one of his best friends to set him up to be killed. And going through that trauma of not having a father there to mold and shape and affirm me was very hard and difficult. And going through that. That in my life, it pretty much shaped my thought process about how I view and see men. And then at the age of 13, you know, my mom had decided, you know, she was ready to get married again. And the man that she had brought into our lives did not accept us. Myself with two other siblings, they did not accept us. I remember speaking to him and asking him, you know, about, you know, being my stepdad. And he said to me, he said, you know, I'm not here for you and your siblings. I'm just here for your mother. And as a woman or a young lady at that time, him saying to me, you know, I'm not here for you. Come on, I grew up without a father. So I had my older brother. But, I mean, we all know, or people who have witnessed growing up without a father, what that means for a young woman of not being able to know what love looks like. So we look for love in all of the wrong places. We have bad relationships. We don't know what it looks like to be loved, because we haven't received that first love from our physical or our biological father. So for him to say that to me was so very hard, and not having my mom's support as well, that was another, I would say, a moment of trauma in my life. Growing up furthermore into my adult years, I went to a church where at that time in my life I was looking for truth, you know, looking for that moment to be able to come one with God, my faith, because I've gone through so much in life. I was at that moment where we hit a wall and we're like, geez, what's next? You know, look for a center and peace. And I went to a church looking for truth. It was a revival at that time that was going on. And the leader of the church, you know, he said to me, he said, you know, oh, I think, you know, I see so much in you. I see how much you love God, you know. And in that moment, I was 17 years old. I didn't really know too much about my walk, the way that I could have growing up in my grandmother's church. But, you know, he took that moment to pray on someone who loved God, who loved people, you know, and who was very weak at that moment, very in a broken place, you know. And I recall he called me to the back of the church, and he asked me to become a part of his nurse, his church. So I would be there serving in the church from day to day. And he took that moment, and he asked me, and I was 17 at the time, he asked me, you know, how would you like to be a pastor's wife? I mean, I was so taken back by that, because I'm like, wait, what?
Was he proposing to you? Is that what you said?
At that time, I think that he was prompting me to have a relationship with him.
With him, just what you needed, right? How did you deal with that at 17?
At 7, I was confused. I was really confused. I didn't have anyone to speak to it about, or my mom.
Right.
And I said to him, like, no, right. No, absolutely not. You know, and I eventually had to leave the church, and it was a trauma moment for me, because, to be honest with you, yes, at some point in my life, I craved, you know, wanting to have that that love into my life and wanting to have someone to love me, but it was misconstrued, because he saw the opportunity to pray on someone who truly loved God, yeah. On someone who was weak and someone who was broken.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, me, I fell into that trap. And the reason why I fell into the trap is because, one, I was in a vulnerable place. Two, I grew up without my father. And then three, I was going through so much in life. So I did fall into his trap.
Yeah. You know, It's a fascinating series of events. You're looking for someone to pray, spelled P-R-A-Y, and you mm-hmm. wind up mm-hmm. with somebody who's doing the other kind of praying. Before you go any further with this, you say your father was killed when you were very, very young. When did you become aware of the circumstances of his death? How old were you?
I had to be about 7 years old, because I remember going into my mom's bedroom and asking her, how did he die? And she would never be clear, never say what happened. She would always say, you know, when you get old enough, I'll tell you what happened. So I had to be about 7 years old.
And she told you. And at seven, what was the impact on that? Must be difficult for a young mind to get your head around. What was it like for you?
It was very hard, and how I dealt with it is silence. I didn't talk a lot. I internalized everything, and my mother would tell me that at one point in my life, I was mute. I stopped talking. And when we would go to the store, if I would want anything, I would point at it. And I asked her, like growing up, I asked her, well, why was I so quiet? And she was like, she didn't know. She took me to doctors, and they couldn't even explain, you know, what was going on. So in that silence and growing up, I was this broken little girl. I remember going to the church at my grandma. My grandmother's had her own church, and I grew up in the church. And I remember a prophetess looking at me, and she's prophesying to me, and she's saying, wow, this baby is so hurt. She is so broken, you know. And I would just cry and cry and cry. And I didn't have an outlet, and that leads to how I found my outlet in writing, because I was so quiet, I didn't have a way or a means to communicate.
To express yourself, and we're going to get into that because it is fascinating. I have heard, doing this program, many, many stories of people who have had traumatic childhoods and events in their lives that have plagued them, and they didn't understand why, and most of them, unfortunately, turned to some other outlet to dull that pain or to get centered, and most of that behavior is pretty bad. That you found writing is both fascinating and the reason we have you here. How did you find writing? How does that happen?
You know what? I stumbled into writing after I had to be maybe 12 years old, and you know, everyone has like a little crush. You know, I was into a little relationship at the time. And at the time, the gentleman had broke up with me, and I wrote a poem and to express how I felt about the situation. And from that moment, at that time, I became one with writing because it was my time to express how I feel. I was feeling all kind of angry, all kind of hurt, all kind of brokenness. Hear me, 12-year-old, think that I'm like in some type of relationship. And I expressed how I feel from top to bottom, and it started as a diary, of course, but it turned into poetry. And I would every night I would take at the end of the day everything that I went through throughout the day. I'll turn it into poems and writing and expressing myself. And it saved me. It helped me because I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have a close relationship with my mother. I had siblings that I wasn't so close with enough to open up about how I feel. So writing for me was my outlet.
Mm-hmm. Did you have...
It was my moment.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It was my moment to vent.
Yeah.
It was my moment to be honest with myself.
Yeah. Did you have anybody, any adult, a teacher or someone who pointed you in the direction of writing to express what you were feeling?
No, I didn't. I mean, in school, you know, you have the different subjects like language arts, math, and so on. But no, I truly know writing to be it's a gift from God for me, because not only am I expressing and I'm venting in my writing, but also it's lyrical. At times it's creative, but it's all truth based off of what my experiences, life that happened to me, how God has helped me through my toughest moments, and how I've been able to find my voice through writing, because it's my moment of truth. It's my moment of what has happened in my life. And being able to open up freely to myself, it has helped me to learn a lot about myself as well.
When you started out writing, did they take the form of poetry initially? Or were they all poems that you were writing?
Originally, it was just me writing my thoughts on the paper, or how my day went, or when I was in that I broke up in a relationship at 12 years old. But then it became poetry, and it became lyrical, and sometimes it would be creative. So I stumbled into it, but now I see it as a gift given to me from God. Now I've been put in a place where I'm able to help others in their journey of writing and being able to open up and find their voice.
Yeah, I know we're going to talk about an event you're going to take part in that the retreat is sponsoring in the Florida area a little bit later on here now. But I really still want to explore a little bit about how a young person finds writing, because it's it's a mystery. It's a kind of mystery of people who can write or try to write. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy thing to do. When you started writing your thoughts down as a very young girl, did you show them to anybody, or were they just for you to be able to write, look at, and reflect upon how you felt? What was the process like? Were you showing it to your moms or your friends or anybody?
That time, no way. At that time, it was for me, because it was intimate. It was my time of intimacy with myself. So a lot of things that I had opened up about in writing, I hid it. And it was like my sacred place to hide my innermost thoughts, my feelings, what was going through my head, what had happened throughout my days. So it was nothing that in that moment that I wanted to share, because being young, you know, you don't want to open up to the wrong person. You don't want to open up to too many people. So you internalize everything. That's a safe place for you. That's why nowadays, even so, when speaking to youth, they don't really relate or want to speak to other people. They prefer to write something down nowadays, post it on social media before opening up about anything in their life. And I can understand why.
Have you found that social media has helped get people into this sort of therapeutic use of writing?
No, I believe that social media, it has become a platform to host, and it's great for all of its marketing and being able to reach your world that, you know, going from door to door, knocking on the door, can't do anymore. But far as a writing outlet, I see quotes here and there. Sometimes even through our Come Forth page, we post quotes. But I don't see it as a means for writing.
Yeah, Twitter is not exactly the greatest form for the kind of deep dive you want to take. So Renevia, let's get deep into the whole act of writing. I think it was one of those guys, Hemingway or somebody, who once said writing's easy. You just look at a blank piece of paper and then bleed. every writer I have ever read that I admired always talked about. Actually, they talked about writing in one of two ways. Some of the best writers in the world said it was almost automatic for them, like someone else was writing and their hand was moving.
Exactly.
And other people said, equally great writers, that this was a hard, hard job. It was a skill like carpentry or bricklaying, something that you had to work at and rework at. So for you, it was almost this automatic kind of thing. What do you tell young people who go, I don't know how to write, or I can't write? What's the first thing you tell somebody who has that attitude about writing?
I'll tell them to look at themselves in the mirror. Be honest. You know, this is your moment of truth. You know, for me, writing was automatic. However, I have had moments in my life where I would look at the paper and I don't know where to write or where to start. But then when I take a moment to reflect and look at my life, and even in that moment where I'm standing at that particular day, that particular time, and I would just begin to, like most writers would say, I would bleed. For young writers these days, what I would tell them to look at themselves in the mirror, you know, take a reflection of their life and look at the paper and the pen as an opportunity to be honest with yourself. What do you want to tell yourself?
Yeah. That's great. So the first thing you would say to somebody who goes, I don't know how to write, or I don't have anything to say, which is probably the most common thing you come up against. I don't have anything to say. You tell them, no, that's where to begin, because you do have something to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When we stop looking at writing as someone wanting us to do something we don't want to do, and start looking at it as a form of therapy and a form of getting to know ourselves, to learn more about ourselves, and make it about ourselves, we find a passion that we didn't know was a passion. Anyone can do it.
In your experience, in your personal experience as someone who writes and teaches others how to do it in a therapeutic context, is it harder to deceive yourself or be in denial when you write something down? In other words, if I wanted to write stuff about myself, let's face it, I'm doing it. I could make stuff up. I could lie to myself. Is it harder to do that when you're writing it than if you were just sort of saying it?
Well, it's, I believe that it's harder to write about it than to just say it, because you don't have a starting point. You know, you're writing out of a place that there's no truth. You know, so when you can reflect and you can look at your life and you can look within, only thing that's within is truth. You can only come from a place of truth, and you can carry on. I mean, people could write books and books about themselves, but to come from a place of deceit and lies, nothing good can come from it.
So how soon do you tell people it's possible to be a serious, you know, not serious writer, but to take it seriously? Do you teach people at a very young age? Tell us about that.
Well, starting at home, actually, you know, my daughter's 12 years old, and her love for writing, it didn't start from me, but it started from a place where I share with her, you know, how are you feeling today? You know, sometimes she doesn't talk to me about everything, but we have a great relationship. However, I encourage her to write about her day, to write about, you know, what happened in school. And with her, even with her, she has used it to be something that's very therapeutic, you know, something that's hidden. But it's not something that I tell her she has to do, but she has found a love for it.
Do you read? Does she let you read her journal?
I haven't asked her to read her journal.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't got to that place as of yet to ask her to read her journal, because she's very open with me.
Mm-hmm.
So in some instances, I feel like anything that I want to know, she would tell me. But I have not asked her to read her journal.
And she's 12. So mm-hmm. You know, we know for a fact that people in general, young people, I guess, are the same, aren't reading the way they we used to in past years. How important is reading to someone who wants to, you know, take writing seriously?
Well, you know, some people find a love for reading and writing. Some people one over the other. But for me, I love reading and writing, you know, but I believe that I favor writing over reading a little bit more.
What's been your experience with regard to men and women, boys and girls, with regard to particularly journaling? I think most of us equate journaling in the diary sense, and most people, I think, believe diaries are the exclusive providence of young girls. Is that true, or are you seeing more young men who journal?
I've seen more young women journal than boys. But the only thing what I find now is that in nowadays and times, young teenagers or young adults, they prefer to spend 10 minutes on social media versus 10 times with themselves writing. So if you try to share writing now or preach writing to anyone, it's more so like it appears as something boring. Why? You know, because they're looking at social media and they're trying to find their identity in social media, you know, versus with themselves. So I believe it has to be encouraged. I believe that young teenagers, adults, even us in our adulthood, it has to be encouraged. It has to be something that light is shined on to say why it's important, what it can do for you, and how it can help you overcome different areas and traumas in your life.
So is it your opinion that young girls will gravitate towards journaling or diary keeping faster or more frequently than young boys, because boys have sort of way more access to, you know, acting out and expressing themselves, whether it's sports or physicality or just being just being boys, and young girls have trouble finding their voice? Is that why you think they would gravitate towards writing a journal or a diary?
Absolutely, Steve. I think that young ladies would gravitate towards writing a lot more than boys, because from what I've seen, boys are taught to to hold everything in, not to let anything out. So like you said, they use more physicality, more sports, you know, to express themselves, and they find their love in sports versus writing.
Yeah, and the culture still doesn't support young men being introspective. It's sort of
Right.
it's not thought to be something guys do. They're extroverts, not introverts, and that's sort of the opposite for young girls. I had a roommate once many years ago, and she and I were great friends. We were roommates, and she was a journaler. She kept a journal. And I'll never forget her saying, "Can you help me move some of my journals from this room to that room?" And what she meant by that was a steamer trunk, and I mean literally a steamer trunk filled with journals going back years and years, and it must have weighed 500 pounds. And I was astonished, and I was, you know, writing a little bit in those days as well. But when I tried to journal, you know, to start a journal, I just couldn't do it. I kept running up into this notion that, well, that's silly. Who cares that I did that today? Can you tell us again when you run into that in your classes when you're teaching this stuff? What do you tell people about things like, well, there's no silly ideas? How do you get them to overcome that?
Well, I would form a topic. You know, I would form a topic that everyone wants to talk about, and I would challenge them to write about it. Like, for instance, you know, we could pick two topics, you know, social media. Is social media, you know, everyone talks about social media these days. So I would form a question, you know, does social media affect your mental health? Or if it does, how, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure any teenage would defend that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You give them a place to start. You don't just give them a blank sheet of paper and a pen and say, write something. You give them a place to start. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because some of the kids, children, they have to be encouraged. They have to be guided and directed. And being able to give them a starting point, you know, that open up their opportunity to write, and then they find their voice in their writing.
Tell us about Come Forth.
You know, what's so amazing about Come Forth is that it came out of a poem that I wrote, and the name of the poem was called Come Forth. And initially, after not writing for a while and coming to write Come Forth, it was pretty much I opened up about the separation that I had with my ex-husband last year. And Come Forth came from just writing a poem. And not that it was not my intention, nor did I know that it would become an actual movement and a means of touching people across the world. One night I was, you know, coming one with myself, and I didn't even pick up a paper or pen. I actually started writing in my phone, everything that I was feeling. And after I wrote the poem, I actually called my brother up and I was like, "Hey, you have to hear this, listen to this, you know?" And, I shared it with him, and I recited it to him, and he was like, "Wow, that's so powerful." So it went from me sharing it with him to him, you know, encouraging me I should go to the studio to, you know, to make an audio out of it. So that night I did. I went and I did an audio portion for the poem called Come Forth. Mm-hmm. And it was about a moment of me of coming forth to be the best version of myself, to leave dead weight behind, to embrace life as it is. And from the audio, it went into a video, and the video is called Come Forth. So Come Forth, starting from just me vocalizing my thoughts and sharing my life experience and my moment to come forth to be who God called me to be and live out of my purpose, it formed into a movement now where I help others to become the best version of themselves through writing, through expressive thought, and also reciting poetry, more so like spoken word.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that just ahead, but before I forget, you have mentioned your very strong faith several times in the discussion of your struggles and how you overcame them and what writing meant to you and all that. What do you say to someone who perhaps doesn't believe in or doesn't have a strong faith-based life? What do you tell them?
I've come in my lifetime, Steve, I've come in contact with a lot of people who don't believe, and it's okay. If that's your starting point, if you don't believe, that's okay. I like to say I don't beat anyone over the head with the Bible, but for someone who don't believe, I just share with them very honestly and very blatantly my life, what has happened in my life, what has transpired in my life. And through my testimony, through the things that I've overcome, through the things that has built me into the woman that I am today, they see the evidence of what my faith has done for me. And in those moments when I have those conversations with anyone who don't believe, that alone, my testimony, mm-hmm. what God has done for me and what has happened and transpired in my life, it's very intriguing. You know, and I didn't always look at it that way, but I use my life and my experiences and things that I've overcome as a means to connect, connect with anyone.
Yeah, and you mentioned now you've gone from strictly writing as a mode of expression for you. Now you do some spoken word, right?
Yes.
Where have you done that?
I've been to different churches. I've been to different venues. One of a big accomplishment for me is that I've had the pleasure of collaborating with one of my Miami sisters, I like to say, at the Adrian Arts Center this year, May, to perform, which is one of the largest performing arts centers in the world. And actually where I've came into known with a retreat, we met in Washington, having the opportunity to open up, you know, for, Mario Lopez, Dionne Warwick, with, spoken word poetry. At that time it was about the opioid crisis, where I utilized spoken word poetry as a means to connect, with the audience.
Yeah, that's how you came to our attention. Our folks in Florida told us that they were going to partner up with you. Tell us about the event that's going to take place in Florida at the beginning of next year. Tell us about that program.
Yes, absolutely. And we are so looking forward to it with having everyone to come forth in the beginning of 2020. So the event, we partner up with Retreat. Well, Retreat Behavior Health is sponsoring it together with Live 360. Where we would be having a creative writing and journaling workshop for teens, but not limited to. It's going to be Saturday, January the 18th, 2020. The starting time is at 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's going to be located at the Live 360 studio. It's going to be on the lower level at 10300 Forest Hill Boulevard, number 2000, and that's Wellington Green, Florida. The tickets are going to be $25, and the price, it does include a custom journal and a catered lunch. And for more information to purchase the tickets, you can get in contact with Jenna Moore. That's JennaMoore. And the email is JennaM@retreatbale.com, where that day we will be dedicating time to creative writing, how to start, how creative writing affects our life, how it helps us to become whole with ourselves. And I look forward to instructing this discourse. I'm super excited about it.
Well, we thank you so much for your amazing story. And anybody that can shed light on the mystery and power of writing is somebody worth talking to. Renavia Williams, thanks so much for joining us on Recovery Radio. And good luck with your writing and your spoken word. And everybody in the Florida area in January, keep an eye out for the program. Thank you for joining us on Recovery Radio, brought to you by Retreat Behavioral Health. If you or a loved one is in need of help, their admissions office is available 24/7 at 855-859-8808. That's 855-859-8808.